We are talking about the second topic. After we talked about Shemitah d'Oraisa or d'Rabbanan, the second overarching topic that we need to bring in order to discuss Shemitah is the question of where the laws of Shemitah apply. So when I started on this topic, I thought I was going to do geography and like actually identify places as they appear in the sources with the places nowadays. And boy, did I get a headache, because there are a lot of debates involved in trying to transplant their geography to ours. And I realized that there are stages we have to go through before we can even approach doing that. So what I'm going to be doing is at least two shiurim on this topic. The first shiur will be today to talk about the lands conquered by the Jews who came back for Second Beis HaMikdash, lands that those Jews did not conquer, but that had originally been taken by Jews after the First Beis HaMikdash. I'm using the word conquer loosely, as we'll see. And then some nuances within that, lands that they left alone for the Aniyim to have. We'll see as we go through this. Then beyond that, next year I want to discuss Eiver HaYarden, as well as the southern parts of Israel, the areas near Eilat and that area and its status. And then maybe, if I can figure out what I'm talking about, we'll go from there into a third issue, which is some of the geography in the north and where the northern boundaries of Israel are. So we'll see as we go through this. But just one general note regarding the geography, I brought you in the first makor on the sheet, the first source, a comment from the Chazon Ish, where he says, "V'adayin ein anu betuchim im efshar lismoch al mapat haaretz shelo diktehu bedivrei Chazal u'shmot ha'arim u'kamosehen nishtanu." He says, we're not really sure whether you can depend on the map of the land, because they weren't necessarily so careful about the words of our sages and the names of the cities and where the places are. They've changed. Sometimes the memory of the city is gone, and they just did it by estimation. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but in archaeological digs you find that a city was destroyed and then built a little bit away from the original spot. And that's going to matter a great deal for some of these issues in terms of where the laws of Shemitah apply. Even being just a little bit away can change everything. And there's a lot of confusion between the sources. There are different editions. And so the Chazon Ish says, take anything you see on a map with a grain of salt. So that's just worth knowing. But, as I said, right now we're working with general principles first anyway. So the first type of land that we talk about is land that was taken by the Jews under Yehoshua, the Jews who originally came in. And then when the Jews came back under Ezra, the Jews settled there as well. The rule is, in general, that the original Kedusha from Ole Mitzrayim, from the Jews who came out of Egypt, that's gone, as far as we understand it. If you take a look at Source Base, the Rambam and Hilchos Trumos writes, "Kol shechziku Ole Mitzrayim min hiskadesh kedusha rishona," everything that those Ole Mitzrayim, the Jews from Egypt, took and sanctified with that initial kedusha, kevin shegalu balu kedusha asan, once they were exiled, that kedusha was gone. And we saw this already from the Gemara last week, in last week's year. Shekedusha Rishona, Lefisha Haisim, Bnei Akibush, Bilvad, Kitchel, Ashaitev, Lo Kitchel, Asid, Lavo, because the original Kedusha, the original sanctity, came from conquest, so it wasn't permanent. Kevan Sha'alu, Bnei Agola, Vachziku, B'mikzas Ha'aretz, when the Jews came out of exile and they held on to part of the land, Kitchua Kedusha Shnia, Ha'omedes La'olam, they gave it a second Kedusha, which endures forever, L'shaita Ula Asid, Lavo, for then and forever. And remember that we deduced that from a Pasuk. Right, but we also talk about the idea that this was not done by conquest, it was done by agreement, Koresh lets them back, and therefore the fact that the Romans conquer them doesn't cancel it. The Rambam has a similar idea in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Vav Tes Zayin. Yes?
This is only referring to land, right?
As opposed to? Nothing to do with Caleb, correct. This is land. So the Kedusha of Ole Babel is this Kedusha Shnia. That's the second one, and it remains forever. Okay. However, the Rambam is understood to say that there is Kedusha from the conquest by Ole Babel. This Kedusha is there, and that will lead to applications of laws of Shemitah. So take a look at the Mishnah in Shemias. This is a classic, Source Gimel. You need this Mishnah to go anywhere. Shalosh Aratzos L'Shvias. There are three different types of lands when it comes to the laws of Shemitah. Kol Shechziku Ole Babel Me'eretz Yisrael Ve'ad Kiziv. Everything that the Ole Babel took from Israel to Kiziv, we're not going to discuss today where Kiziv is. Lo Ne'echal V'lo Ne'evad. So if they took it, you're not allowed to eat from it, and you're not allowed to work it. So we have to discuss what ne'achal and ne'avad actually means. We're going to assume lo ne'avad means don't work it during Shemitah, but what lo ne'achal means may be a little bit more vague when we say you're not allowed to eat from it. That's one piece that we need to discuss. Let's read through the Mishnah first, and then I'll come back. It was only taken under Yehoshua by the Jews who came out of Egypt, from Kiziv to the Nahar, which, again, we're not going to do today which river this is, Nahar Mitzrayim, something else. Amana, we also have to discuss, that's up in the north. These areas, Ava Pishu Asur Ba'avodar Bishviyas, even though you're not allowed to work there in Shemitah, Hasfichin, I'm sorry, I jumped, didn't I? I just jumped down into Dalet. So those areas, Ne'achala Volo Ne'avad, those areas you are allowed to eat, they may be eaten, but you may not work there during Shemitah, and we have to explain what that means in terms of eating. What are you eating? And then there's a third area, which was not taken apparently by Ole Mitzrayim or Ole Babel, and that area, it may be eaten, it may be worked. So what are we talking about here when we talk about being eaten or not being eaten? So the Rambam, in his Perush HaMishnayos that the Bar Ilan has, as well as in Hecha Shmita V'Yovel, Dalet Chav Vav, writes what you see in Source Dalet, that the word Ne'echal refers to what we call Sfichin. Sfichin are plants that grow wildly without anybody having cultivated them. So no one did anything wrong during Shemitah. The plants just grew. They seeded themselves. Some things just grow wildly. So the Rambam writes that when we say that in a land taken by the Ole Bavel, lo ne'echal, that means you're not allowed to eat the svichin. Even though no one did anything wrong, you're not allowed to eat the svichin. Whereas lands that were only taken by the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim, there, ne'echal, you will be allowed to eat them. Why would we ban eating the svichin if nothing was done wrong? What's the reason to prohibit svichin? Sorry? Gezera for what?
People are going to trick. Planting.
Right. You pretend that something was that something grew wildly, which is why we distinguish among the svichin, which everybody knows grow on their own, are fine. Fruit that grows on a tree. You didn't play games and plant your apple tree last month. The things that nobody cultivates. This usually translated as vetch. That's usually like the catch-all word for this type of herb and grass that just grows wildly. Fine, that you can use. But other stuff, which may indeed, someone may have played a trick, that you're not allowed to have. So if you take a look at the Rambam in Source Dalet, he writes, whatever was taken by Ole Bavel, as well as, we assume that when we say Ole Bavel, that it includes Ole Mitzrayim as well. The question of what would happen if Ole Bavel took something that was not from Ole Mitzrayim is one we have to get to, I hope, next week. But if Ole Bavel take the land, then Asur Ba'avoda, no working there, V'chol HaSfichin Shetzom Chenbo, Asur Ba'achila, no eating the Sfichin either. V'chol Shalav HaFziku Ba'Ole Mitzrayim, Ela Ole Mitzrayim Bilvad, it was only taken by the Jews coming out of Egypt, meaning Kiziv to Nahar and Amana, like we said in the language in the Mishnah. You're not allowed to work there, but we're going to permit the svichin. We're not going to say that you can't have the svichin that grew there. That's a rabbinic decree, which we're not going to apply. And then finally, from Nahar Amana and further, you're allowed to work during Shemitah. That's the Rambam's position. We're going to come back to this a little bit and see that the Rash, Rabbeinu Shimshon, as well as the Bar Tzinura and the Ramban, disagree with his explanation of what not eaten means. They don't agree, but it's not important for us yet. We'll come back to it in a bit. That's the idea. There is Kedusha here. The Mishnah Lemelech writes here, as does the Ma'ari Kurkas, that the Rambam believes there is actually full Kedusha in those lands. If you take a look at Source Hay, they give a different approach to the Rambam. V'rabbeinu b'perish ha-mishnah p'reish, and this does not appear in the Bar Ilan version of the Perish ha-mishnayos, but he says, the Rambam commenting on that Mishnah in Shavuot wrote, v'inyan lo ne'achal v'lo ne'avad, when the Mishnah says, you don't eat it, and you don't work it, it means, sha'asur lanu avodas ha'aretz ha'hi, that you're not allowed to work that land, v'im te'aved al yedei acher, and if it is worked by somebody, Aser lech ol imasha totzi, you may not eat that which it produces. So what he says is, putting words in the Rambam's mouth, that lo ne'echal doesn't mean svichen. Svichen are fine. If it grows wildly, you're okay. The problem isn't svichen. The problem is stuff that grows because somebody worked there illegally. That's where we're going to say lo ne'echal. You follow? That's why he takes the Rambam. Umash amar ne'echal avol lo ne'avad, and when it says you may eat in the lands only taken by Olei Mitzrayim, right? You may eat, just not work. That means that working it is not permitted. But if it was worked, you can eat it, just have to treat it as Shemitah produce. I can't. Svira leila rabenu. So he says, what the Rambam believes is she'ein chiluk ben kibush mitzrayim lekibush bavel alahecha denevda b'shvias. There is no difference between that which was taken by Jews out of Egypt and not bavel, and that which was taken by both, except where somebody already worked it. Then we're going to distinguish and say the kibush bavel aser ba'achila kemitshnase be'iser v'kibush mitzrayim muter ba'achila. In some, he says, there's kedusha in both. The only question is, are we going to prohibit that which somebody did illegally? That in lands everybody took, meaning only Bavel took, then if you worked it, then the produce is off limits. Lands taken only by Olei Mitzrayim, if it was worked inappropriately, the food is still mutter. This is a huge, huge difference. I mean, in terms of practicality, if we can determine in Israel that certain lands were only taken by Jews coming under Yehoshua, and were not settled by Olei Bavel, and we have to define what settled by Olei Bavel means, and we will shortly, but if we could really say that, then you can go out and buy whatever produce they make, even though it comes from them having worked there during Shemitah. A very, very big statement. Thank you. So what he's suggesting is that there's kedusha in both, but that the idea of don't eat that which somebody produced is really some kind of overlaid gezera, not attached to the kedusha of the land and not attached to the kedusha of the produce, and therefore it was only created for land seized by Olei Mitzrayim.
He's saying this is kadosh on Geraita level?
I think so. That's the way I think he's reading it. He says, ain chiluk, right? Other than this one point. It sounds like it's kadosh on a del raisa level, but the isser of eating the produce is in the rabbah. If the kedusha is... No, there will be kedusha mid raisa for land of Olei Bavel. He's arguing that that which they took has kedusha shnia, which is a kedusha mid raisa.
Have a kibush mitzrayim.
Right.
Or
kibush mitzrayim, which lands are you talking about?
I'm asking about kibush mitzrayim.
Okay. Kibush mitzrayim and not Olei Bavel. Right, so yeah. He contends.
Right. He wants to say that they're the same. Kibush mitzrayim is mutter ba'achila, and you have to treat it kibush mitzrayim.
Correct.
When he's calling the land of his kibush mitzrayim, does he think that's how the level or drabana?
Right, so that problem is what the Rambam wrote in Hilchos Trumos, in which he seems to say the initial Kedusha is gone.
Yeah.
So, is he going to say he's saying it's
really,
a Derabbanan?
It could mean that they're both Derabbanan. I mean, that's what we talked about last time, that the Rambam might think that Shemitah Mishmada says
it's Derabbanan. Right. True.
It's hard to say that they're both.
The thing is that saying what we said last time was contingent on Kol Yoshevei HaAleh. In other words, you could say the land has kedusha, but you don't have the rules in place in order to trigger a ruling of the Shemitah. The Rambam could hold...
Well, that was based on the other...
He could hold one Daraisa and one Darabana.
What do you mean one?
He could say there's kedusha Daraisa, and yet Shemitah is only Darabana, because you don't have Kol Yoshevei HaAleh.
Yeah, except that the other Rambam also talked... The other plan that was shared was the fact that the Rambam requires... yes, cool, but for all the misses,
right.
And therefore, the Kedusha Shnia is lacking for all. Like, it's not a complete Kedusha Shnia.
Because of the lack of B.S. Kolchem.
Yeah. And neither of them.
But he says B.S. Kolchem is the trigger for Kedusha. Not just trigger for mitzvahs, but trigger for Kedusha.
Well,
what I'm suggesting is
that's
two different things.
Well, I guess we can talk about it after, but in terms of. He talked about B.S. Kolchem It's unclear. I mean, it's a requirement for mitzvah, but what does mitzvah have to do with the mitzvah, I guess? Can you differentiate from the mitzvah?
Right.
And
certainly we're going to see today, and you've already seen in the Maamar Kamos, that you can have kedusha without mitzvah. We're going to talk about the fact that we have here this idea in the Mishnah Lamelech of kedusha shvi'is, that this produce has to be eaten as fully kadosh produce, and yet potentially not have the law of beer. Right? You can have kedusha without mitzvah. And we'll see more about that, but yes. But the question you're asking in general, I think, is an important question. Is the Rambam really saying it's Deoraisa? You're right. If it's land taken by Ole Mitzrayim and not by Ole Babel, the Rambam made it clear already in the second source that we saw that the original Kedusha is gone. So whatever Kedusha you've got has to be some kind of rabbinic institution because Ole Babel didn't take it and therefore there is no Kedusha Shnia. That I think I have to agree with.
That would be why you
Maybe. I'm not sold on tying the rules of the law to the whether there's kedusha or not. I think we do split. We do see that we split those. So that's the big question. But the idea could be that this land has and this produce has kedusha of Shemitah produce, and yet some of the laws will not apply. From Oli Mitzrayim, Midi Rabbanon, from Oli Bavel, Midi Areisa, whatever you want to do with it. Hey, hang in there, because we're going to come back to that point. But the statement made by the Mishnah Lamelech is that the Rambam believes there is full Kedusha, rabbinic, but there's full Kedusha in these lands that we're talking about, Oli Bavel and apparently Oli Mitzrayim. And that's the way that he frames it. Now, one of the questions that comes up that I didn't give you in the original set of Maamar Kamos because I hadn't seen anybody on it, but I put it in now, is the question of what exactly do you mean when you say conquest by Ole Babel? The Jews who came in under Ezra? Or even 200 years after that when some land comes under the control of Jews living in the land of Israel? Is that also now Ole Babel? These people never saw Babel. They don't want to know that you could point them in the right direction and maybe they'll hit Babel. But are they Ole Babel? After all, remember, you only have Nevi'im in the first two generations, right? Haggai and Zechariah in the first generation, Malachi in the second generation, then it's over. Your kings are of unknown provenance. Sometimes they're based on it, sometimes they're Kohanim. Right? What kind of status do they have? So I found a very interesting article by Rav Yosef Efrati. The article is available on the Bar Ilan. It's called Gevulos Ha'aretz L'Shvi'is, in which he shows that this is actually a machlokes. It's a machlokes achronim. If you take a look at the Kesef Mishnah in Source Vav, the Kesef Mishnah is commenting on comments made by the Rambam, which you'll see quoted here. We're going to have to come back to them later anyway. But Umashakasav Rabbeinu, Usvichei Surya Ve'eber Hayardein Mutarim Ba'achila. The Rambam writes, that which grows wild in Surya, Surya is Syria for all intents and purposes, land in the north conquered by David HaMelech in a foray of his own, as well as Eber HaYarden, that which grows on the eastern side of the Yarden. And again, these grew on their own. No work was done during Shemitah. No work was done on these during Shemitah. Mutarim Ba'achila, you're allowed to eat them, because Lo Yehu Artzos Elu Chamurim. These lands should be no stricter than, and I added in the rest of the words, May Eretz Yisrael Shachziku Ba'ol in Mitzrayim. This land should not be any stricter than the lands taken by the Jews coming out of Egypt. In other words, the Rambam says, if you're going to tell me that land not taken by Ole Babel, you're allowed to eat the Sfichim, right, which is what we've already said is the view of the Rambam, right, not the Mishnah Lamelech's version of the Rambam, but the Rambam's version of the Rambam. The Rambam said that you're allowed to eat Sfichim in lands that were not taken by the Ole Babel, so for sure you can eat it in Surya. Got it? Surya, which was David's private conquest, which the Gemara calls Kibush Yachid. Eber Hayayden, we have to discuss next week, God willing. So Kasav Olav HaRaivid, the Raivid commented and said, Mahayat Sarach Lahavio Mi Kal Vachomer. He said, why do you need to do this as a Kal Vachomer? Well, you're allowed to eat Svichin here, certainly you're allowed to eat Svichin there. Harelach Ziku Ole Babel. The only Babel didn't go to Surya. The only Babel didn't go to Eber Hayarden. And therefore, just like, it's not a Kal Vachomer, it's the same category. Just like the Ole Babel, I'm sorry, just like land only taken by Ole Mitzrayim in Eretz Yisrael proper, Svichin are permitted, so do in these areas, Svichin are permitted. That's the right of its challenge, you follow? This isn't the Kal Vachomer from lands taken by Ole Mitzrayim, this is lands taken by Ole Mitzrayim. So the Yesh Lomar, so the Kesef Mishnah answer is not necessarily Dein Anu Yodim Im Kavshu Ole Bavam Tzas Arzos Mei Eber Hayayin Umisuria. He says no, because maybe they did conquer some land on the other side of the Yarden or in Surya. When Shahayu Bavai Yisheni Malachim Takifim, you had powerful kings in the second base Hamikdash. Kmosha Metzino B'Yanei Amelach Shekavashishim Ir. Yanei Amelach conquers 60 cities. And so he says, yeah, it really could be that there were conquests. So it's very clear from this statement that the it's very clear that we don't stop our conquests with Ezra. Anything that is conquered by somebody, we don't know what somebody really means, if it has to be a king or not. But the later conquest came by Yesheni will count as Ole Babel. And he says, so that's his position. Rav Yaakov Emden has a piece in his Moruk Tzia on Shulchan Aruch. He has a kuntras called Geder Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, in which he takes this position as well. The Tzvuos Ha'aretz, which is available on Hebrew books, it's Rav Yehosef Schwartz writing about 150 to 200 years ago. He disagrees. He says, yeah. Yes. Jewish kings during the second base Hamikdash.
Okay, but if that's true, then Rambam is not understand at all.
Why?
Well, the Rambam is not talking about the individual. If the land of Odin Tzrayim took, you're allowed to give a piece of him, and then so do in Syria.
So do in Syria in Eber
Hayarden.
Right.
But Syria and Eber Hayarden would be on
except that they're not Eretz Yisrael proper. They're Ole Bavel, but they're in the wrong place. Surya is easier to do that with than Eber Yarden. Eber Yarden really requires its own discussion, but because of the question of what lands in Eber Yarden we're talking about. But Surya is conquered by David as a private escapade. No, but that's what we're saying. Let's say Ole Bavel come to New York, and they conquer land in New York. They come to Toronto, and they take the CN Tower. So that doesn't make it Eretz Yisrael, right? Which is part of the discussion, in fact. But, well, we have to get to when we talk about Syria. But the point is that what he's saying is, this is the way to read the Kal Vachomer. If you're going to tell me Svichin are mutter and land taken by Ole Mitzrayim, then certainly Svichin are to be mutter in Syria, which wasn't Eretz Yisrael to begin with. Granted that Ole Bavel may have taken land there. It's because there's something wrong with Surya per se. And having Jews living there in Bayesheni isn't going to change that. You follow? That's the idea. We're not going to get to the rest of Surya this week. There's more to say about Surya. The only reason I'm bringing it in at this stage is for the point that the Kesef Mishnah makes, where he's willing to include the later conquests within Bayesheni. Rabbi Yehoshua Schwartz in Sur Zayin disagrees. He says, "Lefi daiti tchum ole Mitzrayim eno taloi bekibush, ki im mitzvos udvar Hashem the parshas elamasei hu magbil." He says, "The boundaries of what are ole Mitzrayim does not depend on conquest; it depends on the boundaries set in parshas Masei. Ve'eretz Yisrael nikreis av mekom shelo kavshu; those are including places where they did not conquer." As opposed to the boundaries of Ole Bavel, Ezra Upnei Doro. She'etzlam ha'kol talui v'kibush v'chazaka. For the Ole Bavel, it was all about the lands that they settled in. She'kibush v'chazaka in Magdilim. Those are the ones that set the boundaries. In the first time in, it's in Parshas Maaseh, when you're told, here are your boundaries. That's Eretz Yisrael. Your second time in, you don't have any such set of psukim. What you have instead is the act of settling. That's what matters. The lands in which they settled, those lands are the lands, sorry, the lands that they did not settle and did not take, those are like outside the Tchum, and those are not part of Eretz Yisrael. V'davka mashenichpash bismanahu, and specifically it counts if it was conquered at that time. Avo mashalo kavash Ezra b'nei Doro, that which Ezra and his generation didn't take. Av shenichpash achar kach bisman malchei achashmonaim v'hor desukedome, even if later generations did it. Nishar bechlal chutz la'aretz. That's chutz la'aretz. Ve'lo nechshav bechlal tchum olei bavel. It's not part of the boundary of olei bavel. And then he goes on to first prove a point that he had made before this, and then he comes back to this point, and he says, "V'raya l'dvarai hasheni," a proof to my second point, which is the point that we're reading. "Sheyadua mishasim yerushalmim mimidrashim she'ako v'kesarin v'tzur v'tzidon ashkelon v'chol eretz edom v'ravim keila lo kavshu ole bavel." He says, all these cities I just mentioned, Ashkelon is an interesting city for him to mention. We're going to come back to Ashkelon. But he says, these cities, they were not conquered by Ole Bavel, Rotzalomar Ezra Udi'ime, meaning Ezra and his group. We know this. We have Midrashim sources, don't worry about it, we know it, he says. Umatzinu Besifrei Maccabi, I should say, Ubesifrei Yosifon, right? Book of Maccabees, as well as Josephus, Shechziku Be'ele Malchei Chashmonoim Umalkei Hurdus. We find that the Chashmonoim took it. We find that that Hurdus took it. They were the kings of the Herodian line. If you could just ask them to be polite, thanks. The Imkein, Bichlal Tchum Ole Bavel Yiye, Imnikra Kibush Ole Bavel Gam Mashenichbash Achar Ezra. And if so, this is included within the boundary of the Jews who came out of Bavel. If we're going to say that it's called Kibush Ole Bavel, even post Ezra. V'zev Vadai Yef Shalomar. But he says you can't say that about all these cities. Halo Yerushalmi V'Tosefta V'Sifri Monim Kol HaMekomo Shemekubal Etzlam Shemi Kibush Ezra V'lo His Kiru Ele Shezacharti Le'el Shenech B'Shu Imachi Chashmo Na'im. He says when you look at the records that we find in Tanaitic literature of which cities count as Kibush Ole Bavel, no one's mentioning those cities taken by the Chashmonai kings. Ella Barush Lanikra Kibush Ole Bavel Kiyim Mashankavash Ezra Davka V'Kidshem V'Kedusha Shnia K'mashankasav Rambam. He says it's only what Ezra took.
Just to clarify that, he's saying whatever the boundaries were set by Ole Bavel and Ole Mitzrayim, and that was it.
That's it. Nothing post Ezra. Right. Now, Rav Efrati himself argues that we don't follow this Tavuos HaAretz, that we actually tend to follow Rav Yaakov Emden as well as the Kesef Mishnah on this. Kesef Mishnah's other name being Rav Yosef Karo. And that therefore we would say that the later conquests also have this status, and therefore what that really means is there isn't that much land in Eretz Yisrael that is taken by Ole Mitzrayim and not by Ole Bavel. That's the outgrowth of this. When we talk about lands conquered by Ole Mitzrayim and not by Ole Bavel, it's actually not going to be such a broad space. Most of the land, taking this broader view of Ole Bavel, will then be included. The cities you just mentioned here, right? Akko, Kesarin, Tzur, Tzidon, Ashkelon stands out for reasons we have to get to. They're conquered later on, post Ezra, in the second Beis HaMikdash. They're not taken by the original Ole Bavel, correct. So, taking the view of Kesef Mishnah, they will count as though they had been taken by Ole Bavel.
Were there any cities that were never retaken by the Ole Bavel?
Yes. Yeah, we're getting there. So, that's all under our discussion about Ole Mitzrayim, not Ole Bavel. So the upshot is you have a fairly narrow, lens of Ole Mitzrayim and Ole Bavel. So you end up with a very narrow space. So the next thing we have to talk about is what about those lands conquered by Ole Mitzrayim and not by Ole Bavel? We already saw the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that in those lands, you may eat, the land may not be worked. So what does it mean when you say the produce may be eaten? We already saw the Rambam's view, right? The Rambam's view was that saying it may be eaten means that the Sfichin are mutter. So the Mari Kurkus challenges this. I brought it for you in Source Pes. He challenges this language of the Rambam. But he's also going to challenge the language of the Rosh. So actually I'll do it all together. Sorry, before we see Source Pes. The Rash and the Bartanura follows him, as does the Ramban to Vayikra Chafhei Zayin, says, when you say Ne'echal in those lands, what it means is that there's no requirement of Biur. There's no requirement of destroying it at the end of Shemitah. One of the lesser known mitzvahs of Shemitah is that at the end of the year, you have to get rid of your Shemitah produce. Whatever you have has to be gotten rid of. We have to discuss, we'll get there in ages, God willing, but we have to discuss the question of what getting rid of means. Does that mean destroying it? Does that mean making it hefker? Can you have to take it back after you make it hefker? That's a discussion we need to have. But there is a law of biur. And according to the Rash, Rabbi Shimshon, as well as the Bartanura, as well as Ramban, when we say ne'echal, what that means is you may eat it even after the time for biur. The time for biur is when it disappears from the fields, when it's no longer growing wild. He says, this stuff from the land only taken by Olei Mitzrayim is not subject to that law of biur. Got it? So the Ma'ariv Kurkus challenges the Rash as well as the Rambam. If you take a look at source Ches now, his first challenge will be to the Rash. He first tells you, Kol Shech Ziku, etc. He quotes you the Mishnah from Shavuos. I'm going to skip it in the interest of time. The end of the second line in source Ches, he says, Upirish Rabbeinu Shimshon. Rabbeinu Shimshon explained, Lo Ne'echal means La'achar Shavuos, below Biur. Lo Ne'echal, meaning for the lands taken by Olei Bavel. Where we don't eat it, that means after, you know, without doing biur. The lo nevad is bishvius, is during Shemitah. V'chem pirish harash. Well, the perish zek kasha. But he says, I have a problem with this. He has two problems. Problem number one is, maishna shechmiru b'makom shechziku olei mitzrayim ba'avoda v'lo achmiru l'chaye v'biur. He says, what's the logic? Why is it that they would have made one rule, which was to say, in land taken by Olei Mitzrayim only, you're not allowed to work. But on the other hand, we're suspending biur. Why choose one over the other? That's one argument that he brings, for which you could make suggestions. You know, in terms of which one is harder on people or destroying produce that's there. But you can make suggestions. That's one challenge. His other challenge is linguistic. The way the phrase goes is lo ne'echal and lo ne'evad, if you're dealing with Olei Bavel as well as Olei Mitzrayim, right? Not eaten and not worked. The not eaten is referring to, according to him, at the end of the year. The not working, right, the time of biur. Not working it is in the beginning of the year. It's backwards. It should have been lo ne'evad, and then whatever grew, lo ne'echal. So he writes, Va'od kasha, the ibcha mibayale. It should have been the opposite. Lo ne'evad hainu bishvius, right? Lo ne'evad during Shemitah. V'hadar, and then lo ne'echal, the hainu la'achar shvius below beer. And then he quotes you the Rambam and says that the Rambam has the same problem. He gives the Rambam's explanation, but then at the end of his quote of the Rambam, he says, V'gam lefizek kasha, the ibcha avale lemisne. I have the same problem with the Rambam's approach. Unless he says, I'm sorry, I flubbed a little bit of the Rikorkus. He first gives you the first explanation of the Mishnah Mas explanation of the Rambam. Remember, we have two different statements of what the Rambam believed lo ne'echal meant. One explanation was that the Rambam said lo ne'echal meant if someone worked it inappropriately, you're not allowed to eat it. The other approach was that which grew wild, you may not eat. So he says, I'm not happy with the Mishnah Lamelech's version of the Rambam. Because the Mishnah Melech's version of the Rambam, don't eat, really should follow don't work. It's don't work, and if you work, don't eat it. Or if you're in land taken only by Olei Mitzrayim, don't work it, but if you worked it, you are allowed to eat it. But he then concludes in Source Ches by saying, Bamesha Piresh Kan, meaning Mishnah Torah, Necha. If you go with the Rambam that it's about Sfichin, then I'm okay with the language. Why? Because they're really two different issues. Right? Lo ne'echal is svichin atzom chamei, and stuff that grows on its own may not be eaten, or may be eaten depending on which land you're talking about. Vit lo ne'evad, it may not be worked, hainu isra avoda. That's the isra of working it. In other words, even though chronologically it's still wrong, you haven't really solved that problem. However, at least you can say you're dealing with two different subjects. Lo ne'echal, don't eat the stuff that grows wild. And don't work the field. They're two different areas. As opposed to, don't eat the stuff that you worked on and don't work. Which is much harder to understand as a logical sentence. Unless you say, don't even work. But that's not what it says. So that's the Ma'ari Korkus's point. There is a third way to understand Lo Ne'achal, and that's from the Gra. The Gra is a wildly different way to read Ne'achal. In Hishnos Eliyo, which is his parish too, the Mishnayos in Zorim, so the he writes there, you can find it as a standalone sefer on Hebrewbooks.org. He says, source test, Lo Ne'achal v'lo Ne'avad. He first explains these reflect two different psukim. Dichsit v'shavsah ha'aretz shabbas l'Hashem. Right, the land shall rest. Zehu avodas ha'aretz. That's not to do avoda. And then ve'achar kach ksiv v'aisa shabbas ha'aretz l'chem le'ochla. It will be for you to eat. Zeh le'enyin achilas haperos. That's about eating the produce. Sheyehu b'kedushas shviyas. That it should have the kedusha of shviyas. That's the way to read Ne'achal and Ne'avad. And therefore what the Gra says is that Ne'achal actually means Ne'achal without kedushas shviyas. The produce does not have the kedusha of Shemitah. That's a very different way to do this, right? Again, so the way he's reading it is land taken by Ole Mitzrayim, but not taken by Ole Bavel, according to the Rambam. Let's summarize and make sure we get it. According to the Rambam, as he words it in Mishnah Torah, right? In those lands, you are not allowed to work. You can eat whatever grows wildly. According to the Rosh and Co., you are not allowed to work. You're allowed to keep whatever you have after Biur. Not only during, but even after Biur. According to the Gra, you're not allowed to work. However, you can eat the produce without any Kedusha Shvius. There's a separate issue of don't work your field. But whatever is there is eaten without Kedusha Shvius. Eating without Kedusha Shvius is huge. For anyone who isn't familiar at all with the laws of Kedusha Shvius, the most obvious and blatant one is you're not allowed to destroy anything that has Kedusha Shvius. So if I have on the table, if I have an orange, and I only eat half the orange, I can't destroy the other half. It doesn't go out. What do I do with it? Oy, is that a headache? We have to get there. And what do you do with the peel and so on? These are good questions. If you're going to tell me there's no Kedusha Shvius now, do whatever I want with it. I can play ball. It doesn't make a difference. So that's this wild view of the Gra, which I don't think we paskin like, but it's the view of the Gra, and it's a third, entirely different view of this. So, going within the other views, going within the Rambam and the Rosh, going within their two views, does this produce have Kedushas Shvius? So the Pa'at HaShulchan says, the Pa'at HaShulchan is a Talmud of the Gra. I didn't bring him on here, but the Pa'at HaShulchan has it following Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel. So his comments appear there. You can get it on Hebrew books. He says the Rosh does not believe that it has Kedusha Shvius. When the Rosh says that it's not subject to Biur, he doesn't believe there's Kedusha Shvius at all, just like the Gra. The Mishnah Lemelech says that the Rambam believes that there is Kedusha Shvius. And when the Rambam says Ne'echal, you can eat the Svichin, it means with Kedusha of Shemitah. I brought this for you in the Mishnah Lemelech in Source Yud. However, when it comes to the Rosh, he says, I'm not so sure. I'm not sure whether the Rosh would require that you eat it with Kedusha. And look at what he does with it. He says in Source Yud, when the Rosh says that which they took, Oli Mitzrayim took, maybe eaten after Biur, is it subject to Kedusha of Shvius when you eat it before Biur or not? He says logically, and this is where I come back to separating Kedusha and various halachos, he says logically, I should say there's no Kedusha. Because if it had Kedusha, then Tzarech Biur. Then you have to get rid of it at the end of the year. He says, I don't understand how you would make any such distinction. Ach, but Mipshat Tavar of Nira de Davka Lechalachar Abir Hey Kilu the Kibush Mitzrayim. Achmashad Ramloi Kilu Vieshvim Kedusha Shvius. But he says if you look at the language of the Rosh, he only says they're lenient regarding this one issue of the of Biur. And that's it. So Yosef Efrati, in this article that I mentioned, Gvulas Haaretz L'Shvi'is, he says, we have precedent in the laws of Shemitah for saying that items with Kedusha might not be subject to Biur. We have a rule that says that items that grow in Shemitah that are not edible for humans, and are not edible for animals, and are not dyes to color things, these items are not subject to Biur. They are subject to Shashvi'is, but they're not subject to Biur.
What's an example of something?
Some kind of the Mishnah gives you, actually. The Mishnah gives you specific items. If you look in the Mishnah in Shvi'is on Min Hazarav, you'll find it there. I don't remember the examples offhand. He also notes that the whole thing is a Gezerah, beginning to end. Since the whole thing is a Derabbanan, and you can shape it however you like. You can apply this law. Now, the only thing is, it's still the language of the Rash. But he says, why not? You can do whatever you like.
You still can't derive something if you don't want. Rabbis can do what they want. It's not like this. They still want to do it based on some sort of...
based on some kind of a derabbanan.
Maybe that's the question. You're right. I mean, the easy answer is that we're just basically Derabbanan.
Right. I mean, the argument may also be made. The argument may also be made, the Chazon Ish in Shvi'is Gimel Chav Beis regarding Surya accepts the idea of the saying that the Rosh says that there's Kedusha without Biur. So we have this idea. Okay. But again, to summarize and make sure that we understand what we're talking about. Lands conquered by Ole Mitzrayim but not by Ole Bavel, we say Ne'echal Avolo Ne'evad. You can eat the produce. You just can't work the land. We have different opinions as to what you may eat it means. The Rambam straight in his Perush HaMishnah says we have it in Hilchos Shemitah VeYovel says it means you're allowed to eat whatever grows wildly. The Rambam is alleged to have said what he's saying is you're allowed to eat that which somebody worked on. The Rash says you're allowed to eat it meaning even after the year is over there's no requirement of Biur. And the Gra in Shnos Eliyahu says it means that you can eat it without Kedushas Shavias. Those are all the different views. In terms of whether there is Kedushas Shavias or not, the Rambam believes there is Kedushas Shavias, and the Rosh is subject to Machlokas. But now we get to a tricky thing, which is, you asked the question before, are there areas that we know the Ole Bavel did not take? So the answer is yes. The answer is yes. I found for David Eli the Mishnah in Shavias that you want is Zion Beis. It says Kol she'enu meichal adam u'meichal behema u'minat sov in u'miskayim ba'aretz yesh lo Shavias u'dam of Shavias but ein lo bir. And then he asks, what are those? So Iker haluf hashota, you get all these great Zerayim species that you have to know Zerayim in order to understand what they are. So you have this kind of wild luf that grows, and the root of the wild luf will count, and so on down the list there. Ayin Shami Yehuda Felix, he'll give you the rundown on what each of these species are. Okay, so the lands that the Ole Bavel did not take really include two separate things. Number one, it includes land they didn't get to. But number two, it includes land that they left alone on purpose. If you take a look on your sheet at Source Yad Aleph, there are three sugyos with this in the Gemara. We're going to look at two of them. The other one I'll just reference. But the Gemara in Chagiga, Maisa Rabbi Yossi ben Dermaskis shahalach lahakbil p'nei Rabbi Lazar belud. Rabbi Yossi ben Dermaskis went to greet Rabbi Lazar in Lod. Amar lo, ma chidush hayu v'beis ha-medrash hayom. So Rabbi Lazar says to him, nu, what did you learn in beis medrash today? Amar le, he replied, nimnu v'gamru, they concluded, Amon u'moav ma'asrin maiser ani b'shvias. That if you're in Amon and Moav, which is Eber Hayardin, then then you separate Meiser Ani in Shemitah, which is a bizarre statement to make offhand, right? During Shemitah, there are no Trumos and Maestros, right? That we know? There's no Truma Meiser during Shemitah? We're good with that? Okay, so that's number one. Number two, in what years do we separate Meiser Ani? 3 and 6. So who invented Meiser Ani in Shemitah? But he says, that's what we learned in Beis Medrash. That in Amon and Moab, they separate Meiser Ani and Shemitah. Amar Lo, So Rabbi Elazar says to him, Yossi, Pshot yadach v'kabel einach. Stick out your hands and catch your eyes. Pshot yadach v'kabel einach. He stuck out his hands and he caught his eyes. And yes, as you'll see, this is literal. What in the world that means is a great discussion for another time. But he catches his eyes. Bacha Rabbi Elazar v'amar, Sod Hashem li rayavu briso lahodiyam. Rabbi Elazar says, how in the world did they know? Hashem tells his secrets to those who are in awe of him, who revere him, because Hashem must have told them this, because this is in fact the law, but they had no way of knowing it. Amar lo lechem or lem. He said, go tell them, al tachushu l'minyanchem. Don't worry about your vote and who sided with whom and what the final tally was. Kach mekublani Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sheshama meirabo verabo meirabo hilchasa l'moshe misinai, whatever that means. Amon umoav me'asrin meiser oni b'shvias. We have a tradition going back to Moshe at Sinai, so to speak, that we tied meiser oni in Shemitah in Amon and Moav. The reason I say this, so to speak, is because at Har Sinai, how in the world is Moshe going to be reporting what they should be doing in Amon and Moav in Shemitah? You know, later on, at that point, Amon and Moav isn't even part of Eretz Yisrael, and it's still the Eber HaYarden, and so on. Generally speaking, in shorthand, we take Halacha L'Moshe Misinai to refer to when we know something to be true and to be Iker Torah, but I don't have a pasuk for it. So we say, this is what it's always been. This is the way the Halacha has been from the very beginning. Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. There's more to say about that, of course. Matam, what's the reason why they're doing Maaser Ani, though? Harbei krachim kavshu ole Mitzrayim velo kavshim ole Bavel. There are many cities that were conquered only by ole Mitzrayim and not ole Bavel. Why? Because the original Kedusha does not remain for the future. V'hinichum, and they deliberately left them. So that the Aniyim would depend on them during Shemitah. So in order to support the Aniyim, what we're supporting them with, we have to figure out. But in order to support the Aniyim during Shemitah, they said, Ad Kan, we're not conquering these cities. So Rabbi Elazar is so taken aback that the Beis Medrash had come up with this idea. He said, stick out your hands and catch your eyes, which is a statement of some kind of disturbance. So Tana, La'achar sh'nizyash v'dayta, once he calmed down, Amar yiratzon sh'yachzu eina yosi l'mekoman, may his eyes go back where they were, v'chazru. And Baruch Hashem, Shalom Yisrael, everything went forward from there, okay. How to understand that story really requires its own discussion. It's just not l'inyan right now. But the same idea is seen in the version in Chulin. The version in Chulin gives us a little bit more background. Heyed Rabbi Yoshua ben Ziruz ben Chamiv Rabbi Meir lefnei Rabbi al Rabbi Meir sha'achal ala shayarek bebeit Shan. Rabbi Yoshua ben Ziruz, who was the brother-in-law of Rabbi Meir, testified to Rabbi that Rabbi Meir had eaten a leaf of yerek, a vegetable, in Beit Sha'an. And on that basis, v'hitya Rabbi is Beit Sha'an kula al yado. Rabbi said, Beit Sha'an is mutter. What does mutter mean? We'll come back to it in a moment. Chavru alav echav u'beis aviv. His brothers, his father's household came to him and said, makum shavosecha v'avos avosecha nagu bo iser ata tinok bo heter. By what right do you permit this? Everybody always said usher. You're going to change this on the... What are you doing? Beit Shan is usher. And so he went into this whole drasha about how later generations changed things that the earlier generations did. The earlier generations left it for them. He talks about the decision to grind up the nachash nechoshes from Parshas Ukas. I'm skipping now to the second paragraph in Source Yud Beis. But he said, this is what we do. Maskif la Yehuda braid Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. So Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, challenged and said, Umi ika lamanda amar de Beit Sha'an lav me'eretz Yisraeli. He says, wait a minute. Who in the world said Beit Sha'an shouldn't be part of Israel? What are you doing? Vaksiv, I have a pasuk that says, V'lo horish Menashe et Beit Sha'an v'espenoseh v'estanach v'espenoseh. That Menashe was supposed to conquer Beit Sha'an and they didn't do so. But it's part of Eretz Yisrael. It's within the boundaries. How did Rabbi permit this? How did Rabbi Meir eat there? Ishtamit say, because he had forgotten, that there were many cities that they did not conquer, and they left them for the Aniyim in Shemitah, and the Gemara continues from there. So, that idea is seen there. It's also in Yevamos Daf Tezai in Amud Aleph, but it didn't add anything to our understanding, and so I didn't bring it on the sheet. So ruled the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, Hilchos Trumos, Aleph, Hey, as well. I brought it for you in Soros Yud Gimel. Right, if you see that there, they left them as they were. Velo patrum. Now look at what the Rambam says they did. Velo patrum min hatruma v'hamaisros. They did not exempt them from Truma and Maaser, so that the paupers could depend on them during Shemitah. V'Rabbeinu HaKadosh Hiter Beit Sha'an Me'osam HaMekomo Shlo Ziku Bem Olei Bavel V'Hu Nimna Al Ashkelon U'Patra Min HaMaisers. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh was the one who said, yeah, Beit Sha'an is one of those places they didn't take, and he also exempted Ashkelon from Maaser, and that's that Ashkelon piece that we had before when it was listed as one of the cities that they hadn't conquered. That's what the Rambam is referencing here. But the point for us is that these places are not exempted from Truma and Maaser. Now here, I gave you a reference on the sheet in Source Yedaled, but I didn't have a chance to really go through it in depth, and I wasn't going to retype it here. But the Netziv to the Sifri in Akev, Tesvav, in the edition of the Sifri that has the Netziv on the bottom, discusses how in the world you had a right to not settle a city in Eretz Yisrael. What does that mean? We just decided we're not settling these cities? Ole Mitzrayim had an obligation to conquer everything. They're criticized for not conquering their Nachalos. By what right do the Ole Bavel say, this is in the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, but we're not going there? Who invented that idea? So take a look at that Netziv and see what you see. Okay. Two questions, actually three questions, which we have 7 minutes for, so we're not going to get through everything. But actually four questions. Good. The question number one is, what did Rebbe actually permit in Beit Sha'an? Question number two is, so what space was it that they left for the Aniyim? Question number three is, what exactly did they accomplish with this for the Aniyim by enacting Maaser Ani? What's all that about? And then the fourth question is, why don't these lands automatically have the same status as the lands that the Ole Mitzrayim took and the Ole Bavel didn't? Meaning we already learned, we spent 20 minutes or more talking about lands that the Ole Mitzrayim took and the Ole Bavel didn't. And we said that you're not allowed to work there in Shemitah. So these cities should be the same exact thing. Why differentiate? You follow? So we have four questions. We'll start on the first. The first question is, what exactly was it that Rabbi permitted in Beit Sha'an? So Rashi's view in Source Tezvav is this. At Beit Sha'an Kula, he permitted Beit Sha'an, Lechol Yerek Shalah, to eat its greens, Uperos Ha'ilan, as well as the fruit of the trees, Bitivlan, without having tithed them. Why? Kesal Gadaitach, because we think right now what's going on in the Gemara is Kesav Rabbi Meir La Meretz Yisrael. The thinking right now is that it's not in Israel. They correct that to say it is, but they didn't conquer it. But their point is Meiser Dagon, tithing grain, Bechutzala Aretz Hunoig Bidarab Midrabanan, is still rabbinically applicable outside of Eretz Yisrael. Ha'ulubaretz Del Raisa, because it's biblical in Israel. Aval Meiser Yerek, the Baaretz Gufeder Rabbanan, lo gazer midi Bechutzala Aretz. But Meiser Yerek, which in Israel itself is only rabbinic, they didn't make the Gezerah in Chutz La'aretz. And then he continues. So Rashi's statement is that he only permitted the Dirabbanans, like tithing greens. That's what he permitted. And the Mari Kurkis on that says, yeah, you need to say this. Because we find that Truma and Meiser apply even in Chutz La'aretz in many places. So how in the world could Rebbe permit it in Beit Sha'an in Israel proper? Right? He says, what kind of sense would that make? You're telling me now they left these cities for the Aniyim. I get it. But you're going to tell me that we're practicing Truma and Meiser in Mitzrayim and we're not practicing it in Beit Sha'an? That's a really hard idea to accept. Yes, you could say the Rabbanan are doing whatever they want, and they built a fence around the city and said, this produce only. But the produce is getting out of the city, and you're going to have total confusion on the markets as people sell things and say, oh, this is from Beit Sha'an. You're worried, we were gozer, we decree it in Mitzrayim, because we're worried about produce mixing. You're not going to worry about produce from Beit Sha'an mixing? That's very hard to accept. The Mari Kurkus offers three other explanations that people bring, are brought here in Soros Tezayin. I'm jumping to the middle of the second line in the interest of time. In Source Tezayin, Ulekach, he says, Ulekach yesh mi shetirets delo hiterele yerek aval dagon chayev zedas Rashi. Right, that's Rashi's view that he only permitted the rabbinic ones. Vinirish zedas harayved. He says Rav Avram. He means the rayved zal. Ugvar hikshu betosos alpirish Rashi zal bedachuoso. Tosos rejected that idea. Vacherim tirtzu didemai davka hitir. Others have answered that he only permitted demai. lo vadai. The maize produce that may have been tithed, we're not sure. V'yesh mishatira it's the lav lagamri hitir al chumrei eretz yisrael shenel ba kulei trumos lutzlaris. Some say he owned what he lifted were the chumros that we have in eretz yisrael. They talk there about various kulos that you have for stuff in chutzlaritz, such as where somebody claims that it was already tithed, that sort of thing. There are certain kulos. V'yesh mishatirets belokech menagoyu shehitir, or some say he permitted where it was bought off a non-Jew. V'ol terutzim acherim ne'amru bazeh. Aval das rabbeinu eino kein. But he says it's not the Rambam's view. The Rambam we saw, right? We read the Rambam already in Soros Yud Gimel. He says that they were pater from trumos umaisros. So he says, Ela de la gamri hitiru pater menamaisros. Shekeven sheiniach mekomos elu kideshi yismachu aleim anim bishvius le gamri patrum. That he actually permitted it entirely from Meiser. He mentioned no obligation whatsoever. There's an obligation for Ammon, Mitzrayim, Bavel, Moab, but not here. So in terms of what Rebbe permitted, the answer is it's a machlokas. Surprise. But what exactly was this space that was left for the aniyim? And with this I'll conclude. The language in the Gemara was harbe krachim. Right? A krach is a city of significant size. Remember the Gemara at the beginning of Megillah? A kfar is a village, a krach is a city. And not just that, but many cities. So Chazanish is worried that you're going to take this and run with it. So take a look at what he has in Source Yud Zayin. He says, Nira shalo hinichu ole bava lakrachim shehinichu el hakrachim utchuman velo yoser. He says it was only the city and the tchum of the city, nothing further, not regions. Because there is another view that says it's an entire region. Like Beit She'an is a whole region. He says, no, it's the city proper. It was with difficulty that they did this at all. They would not have been spendthrift with this and just done everything. Only Beit She'an proper, not areas beyond. Then he goes further in Gimel Chavdala that I brought you in Source Yud Ches. He says, you have to be really careful because we don't actually know where these places are anyway. And he says that's why the Rambam only lists Beit She'an and Ashkelon, because that's the only ones that he can actually identify. The Chazon Ish's point is bolstered by a question asked by Rosh Hashol Yisraeli. Rosh Hashol Yisraeli in his Eretz Chemda asks, I don't understand. We learned the Mishnah, and the Mishnah said that there were three areas, right? Ole Mitzray, Ole Bav, I'm sorry, Ole Bavel and Mitzrayim, Ole Mitzrayim, and nobody. According to you, there's a fourth area. The area that they were Meniach, the area that they left. Why isn't there a fourth area in our Mishnah? So Rav Yosef Efrati in his Gevulos Haaretz L'Shvius answers that because it wasn't a definable region, it was just a city here, a city there, a city there. You're not going to add that as one of the Aratzos, one of the lands for Shemitah. And Rav Efrati notes, this is supported by the Rehov inscription. If you're not familiar with the Rehov inscription, I gave you a link for it in Hebrew Wikipedia. There isn't, I believe, a parallel one in English. Maybe there is. But but in Source Yud Ches, I gave you the link. It is a must read. It is an inscription which I believe is dated back to the 5th century, so you're dealing with the time of the Mishnah still, found in a Tel Rehov, which is just south of Beit She'an, and it delineates the borders of areas for Shemitah using the language of the Tosefta, the Sifri, and the Yerushalmi. So what you're seeing is a very early attestation to the existence of Torah Sheh Be'al Peh in a form that is circulating among the population as something lamaisa. So it's very important to be familiar with it. But Rav Efrati quotes it to point out that the language in the Rehov inscription regarding Beit She'an delineates what's in and what's out. And even within Beit She'an, parts are in and parts are out. So that tells you that it wasn't this broad swath, it was just narrow, here's a city, type of a thing. That's what was left for the Aniyim. So we still need to ask two more questions regarding the lands that the Ole Bava left alone. Specifically, so what exactly did they permit for the Aniyim here? And the question of why don't those lands have the natural status of lands taken by Ole Mitzrayim and not Ole Bavel? And then I want to move on from that to Eiver Hayarden, Amun Umoav, Mitzrayim, Surya, and the lands in the south. And if we can get to the northern border, that will be wonderful. I don't yet know which days we're going to do Shir between now and Yom Kippur, but at least one day, hopefully, we'll have Shir, and possibly two if we need it as a finishing thing. Okay? Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos.